Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is
Fight Disciples.
Welcome to podcast episode number 853. We are the Fight Disciples. This is your MMA review from the weekend just gone. And what a week it is going to be in the world of MMA. Thursday night, Paris, all eyes on Cedric Doumbé doing Cedric Doumbé things in the PFL. And then Saturday night, woof, Miami is the destination for UFC 299. Sean O'Malley defending against Marlon Chito Vera. The card is absolutely stacked as well. And we'll be bringing you a huge preview later on in the week. Sandwiched in the middle of that, PFL superstar. Can we call him that? He's not even fought in the PFL. Former UFC heavyweight champion. Taking on former two-time unified boxing heavyweight champion, Anthony Joshua. We're referring, of course, to Francis Ngannou. It is one heck of a fight week. And because of that, we are doing a series of special shows this week. So 8 o'clock on our YouTube channel, we are going to be live. Yes, we're talking boxing. I get it. But Francis is involved in it. So there'll be a little bit of an MMA chat as well throughout the course of the week. So 8 o'clock on YouTube every night this week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. We are live with a watch along on Friday as well. So if you're sitting at home watching AJ, watching Francis, put the YouTube on. And you'll have a bit of a fight companion too. All exciting stuff, mate.
I can't wait because obviously Monday, Tuesday, Thursday are going to, and Friday are going to be fully interactive shows. So anybody watching on YouTube, anybody watching on social media can get in touch with us direct. We'll discuss things live on air. And then, of course, Wednesday, sandwich right in the middle is actually the return of Fight Club. So we are going to have an array of Fight Disciples live on air with us on Wednesday night. Shooting the shit about AJ versus Ngannou. I can't wait, honestly. I'm so looking forward to it. I think we've got a AJ special tonight, an Ngannou special tomorrow, Fight Week special on Wednesday, a review of the week and the weigh-ins on Thursday night, and then, as you've just said, that watch-along live on Friday night as things unravel in Saudi Arabia. Woo! Big Fight Week field, baby.
This show, though, is looking back at the weekend just gone, Apex. It was supposed to be Saudi Arabia, randomly. It was Saturday night, but obviously it all got rescheduled and thrown towards the Apex. On paper, looked good. On paper, looked good. And there's moments in here of which we will celebrate and get crazy about, but I think the main and co-main, because it finished the way that it finished, it kind of dropped off a touch, didn't it? And it kind of... It kind of left people thinking a little bit at the end of it.
Was five knockouts in the first seven fights. It just came too soon, that's all. You know, it just came too soon. We've all been there.
Came too soon. For me, the highlight, mate, is Christian Leroy Duncan. I know that is very British bias, but that is a top quality performance.
Very British bias. Vicious Oliveira dropped one of the most stunning knockouts you'll ever see. And Steve Aesog unleashed one of the best left hooks you'll ever see. But I'm going to go with Christian Leroy Duncan.
Damn right. Kids. Damn Jesus. Right I am.
People say I'm Scouts bias.
Now, listen. The lads rocked up to the UFC. He's had an okay start. He ran into Petrosian, fell short, got a bounce back victory. But it's all been not safe. Because he's not a safe fighter, he's a striker at the end of the day, and he's very fan friendly to watch. Especially if you've watched him previous to the UFC, you'll know what Christian Leroy Duncan's all about. but you've kind of just been waiting for it in the UFC. You kind of want, you've been waiting for it to just pop properly. And on Saturday night, it popped. He came out super, super aggressive. And I was like, mate, this is mint. Spinning stuff in there. Really aggressive striking, really accurate striking. I thought the first round was absolutely sensational. And then he mixes it up. He goes, hang on a minute. This isn't just a striking masterclass, kids. This is MMA. I'll show you that I can do this as well. Let's pick this dude up, dump him on his ass, and elbow the living daylights out of him. I was like, whoa, party time, son. I thought it was a brilliant performance. Yes, it's British biased, but I don't care, mate. That was what I think we've been waiting for. And now we get excited. We can get excited now because there's some big, big fights coming forward. Of course, we know that the UFC are planning to come to the UK in the middle of the year. He has to be on the card, and hopefully we can get him a solid name to be stood across from him to get the fans really excited, because a performance like that warrants it.
Yeah, I think in the post-fight interview when DC put a mic in his face and he said, you know, we're going to England in the summer. Do you want to be on that card? And he was like, yeah, of course, man. I think most British fight fans probably spat their tea out. I know we've mentioned it on here, but it hasn't actually been formally released by the UFC. And I think the reason is obviously what's going on in Spain.
I still don't think it is. That was just DC being DC, mate, isn't it? He's yeah. Oh shit.
Well, it was supposed to be around July time, wasn't it, in Manchester, this brand new co-op arena. But obviously, as I say, things in Spain may well change that around now, because obviously Ilia Topor is an absolute megastar over there. So that's why I don't think it's been confirmed. I think there might be a switch. That doesn't mean we won't get Manchester later in the year, maybe. But anyway, I thought CDL was brilliant. And CLD was brilliant. And these are the kind of performances that we've come to know him for early on his professional career, from his amateur days. He's so destructive. Yes, he's very pressure heavy. And it was just nice the way the conversation afterwards, where, you know, his approach to it, when it was like, we knew Ribeiro was a striker, was heavy-handed, got a lot of first-round finishes. We knew he's aggressive. We knew what that means is he's comfortable on the front foot. He's comfortable putting pressure on you. He wants to walk forward and unload. So our tactics, Team CLD tactics, was let's bully the bully. Let's push him back. Let's get aggressive with him from the first bell and go forward. Now, of course, that's a dangerous tactic against the big hitter. But Christian Leroy Duncan was just too big, too long, too talented for Ribeiro. You know, used his kicks well, used his jab really well, created angles. It wasn't just straight line stuff. And to be honest, by the end of round one, I'm looking at Claudio Ribeiro going, you're out of your depth here, mate. This guy is way better than you. And it was just nice to see CLD come out in the second round and go, right, I'm getting this guy out of here. And he done it in style. Mega.
Yeah. Great performance. Finish the show there then, shall we? Listen, I know that the majority of people tuning in, you tuned in for that main event, Rosen Strike against Gaziev. We bigged it up last week. Two big lads, knockout power. Obviously, second appearance in the UFC for Shamil. And it just wasn't to be. The fight, listen, I think Mark Goddard actually put us all out of our misery, didn't he? He just went, lads, seen enough. What did he say? He said he can't see. Right, done. Right, that's it. Out of it. Wave it off. It didn't live up to the expectations. I thought Rosenstreich actually was clever.
Yeah.
He didn't engage too much. He was obviously constant back foot, constantly going backwards, but his jab was sensationally busted up his face consistently. It just didn't kick off. And from a spectacle, from a fan point of view, we were sat there going, and I think following Petrino and Tyson Pedro as well, they just merged into each other, didn't they? They were very, very similar the way that those two fights merged, the co-main and main.
Yeah, very, very seven largely boring rounds, you know, with not a whole lot of action and quite one-sided one way or the other. I thought Rosenstruck, to be honest with you, you know, we tipped on Thursday. I'd have put good money on Gaziev getting a win here. I didn't do a Knicks picks on Friday. I was keeping my powder dry for this week, so it's going to be a busy week. But I really thought that Gaziev, with his amateur experience, extensive amateur experience, that's why he was in his in a main event in the UFC, in his second, you know, UFC contest, because of his background. You know, this is not an ordinary prospect. It's a guy supremely talented. But let's be honest, carrying a bit of extra timber there, that's unnecessary. If you want to compete at the top of the UFC, it's all good and well being in the UFC and being a heavy set guy, especially in the heavyweight division, of course, because, you know, at the end of the day, muscles don't win fights. But the cardio has got to be there. The fitness has got to be there. And I think Gazeev has found out now that there's a, it's one thing dominating three rounders in the amateur game and coming through and dominating, you know, against a certain level of opponents. But once you get into the top 10, once you get into the top 15, you know, you've got to, there's got to be a next layer on your, you can't just be a great fighter. You've got to have the cardio, the S&C, the nutrition, the fitness, even in the heavyweight division in the modern day. You know, these guys are actual athletes. Tom Aspinall is a fucking athlete. You know, most of these guys in the top 15 are proper athletes. And Rosenstruck, with all due respect, he's gone away. We haven't seen him for a year. The inactivity, we were like, this doesn't look good. But actually, he's been away grind. I seen in his post-fight interview, he was like, shout out to Molawal, my wrestling coach. And I was like, well, there you go. Kid's been wrestling for, because that was the hole in his game. He was getting out wrestled by people. So he's fucked off for a year. Stayed in the top 15 because of he's not losing, but he's grinding away in his wrestling. I thought his takedown defense against Gazeev was on a level that Gazeev wasn't expecting. Mm-hmm. And then that jab, as you rightly pointed out, that was money. Bust him up with the jab. Don't get greedy, because you are a big hitter. Once you start throwing big hands and getting big shots going, Gazeev then, bump, green light, shoot, double leg, takedown, here we go. Welcome to Dagestani fight town. Because Rosenstruck didn't do that. He had nice takedown defense, but it was all just behind that jab. Jab, jab, no, not getting greedy. Jab, jab, busting them up slowly but surely. And I think that's the problem. Gazeev, one, I would question his fitness competency going into 25 minutes. But I think that was advanced because his nose was busted everywhere. His mouth was bleeding. Like, he would have had problems breathing. He would have struggled to breathe through his nose. That was because Rosenstruck, there were the tactics. Bust him up, slow him down, tire his engine. And I'm glad Mark stopped it as well, yeah. I'd seen enough at that point because he didn't want to be there. You know, he'd gone to the ranking opponents. He'd found out, okay, this is a different level in terms of fitness. I think, still think Gazeev's got the ability to come back and have a good run. But fitness-wise, he wasn't ready for the top 15. And it was nice that Rosenstruck went, boom, there you go, kid. Get back to the mats. Good win for him. Just boring.
Right. This is where we need you, in the comments section, because this is the first question of the show. Mohamed Mokhaev, does he get a title shot at UFC 301 against Alexandre Pantoja? Discuss. What do you think?
It wasn't the statement that we were dreaming of. You know, I think any kind of stoppage here, regardless of what happens inside the octagon over the 15 minutes or however long it might have won and for, any kind of stoppage for Mo is the statement to go, right, Abazi's injured, Royval Moreno just knocked shit out of each other and haven't really stood out. Plus, they both lost to the current champion anyway. Keita France is not available right now. God only knows what Manuel Cap's doing right now. I'm the surgeon guy. I'm the talent. I'm the 23-year-old. I'm the one with all the ability. Give me the opportunity, and I think he gets it. But it wasn't quite the statement. You know, Alex Perez did have some good moments in there. That's why the fight was, you know, probably 2-1 either way. I thought Perez probably won that second round, but absolutely Mo pulled it out in the third round with that, you know, Chester back suplex. That was the biggest moment in that third round. But the exact thing you were bringing up on Thursday is exactly what happened. Mo, lovely striking first round, mixing up really well. The best, clearest round to score of the fight. Round one, Mo Mokhaev, lovely bit of stand-up, lovely bit of grappling, happy days. But 2 and 3, it was a lot of Mo, shoot, Mo, shoot, Mo, shoot. And I'm like, you've got to move on from this. We know you can shoot. We know you're amazing on the ground. Everyone does, even Alex Perez. But, mate, you were lighting them up with your hands. Your hands were good. Keep going with your striking. So I just think what I said to you on Thursday, when you brought that up, too much shooting, not enough striking. That's where the experience hasn't come in yet. That's where I just think is Mo Mokhaev going to be a lot better, even better than he is now in a year's time? Of course he is.
Yeah.
But what I mean is, in a year's time, I think he beats Pantoja. I think right now it's a big gamble. Whereas in a year's time, he could begin a reign that goes on forever. Now, listen, Mo might be like, I'm ready now. Put me in now, coach. Sounds. You know, he's beating everyone put in front of him. You can't argue with that. But this wasn't the performance that made me go, right, get me to Rio. This is on. It's on. Now I'm a bit like, I still think Mo needs someone in the top 5. But his development.
Yeah, it's tough, man, because Pantoja's fighting, guaranteed, right? He's in at Brazil for 301.
Yeah.
So he needs the opponent. So you look around the rest of this division and Royval, it's hard to make an argument for Royval based on UFC 296. He's just had a shot. He's lost to him previously. So he's had two defeats to Alexandre Pantoja. And he's just been comfortably beaten at UFC 296. Don't get me wrong, it's a competitive fight. I'm not dogging on him because he was brilliant. And he definitely stepped up and he showed something there that everybody got excited about. And it was a good fight to watch. But Pantoja won, and Pantoja won convincingly. Can you make an argument for him to go straight back in, which would be Pantoja's next fight? So it's basically back-to-back for Pantoja. Pantoja himself deserves fresh meat. He deserves a fresh opponent because he's beaten Moreno. That was close. Yeah. If Moreno beats Royval, there's an argument for Moreno to go back in. There is, because the first fight was tight, and he's also had a fight in the interim, Pantoja, with Royval. So you could go back in.
Yeah.
But that didn't happen. So you're in a situation from Pantoja's point of view is, well, why am I fighting Royval again? I've just beaten him. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't really lit the gaff up by beating Moreno, who I've also beaten. I deserve some fresh people. So you look around the rest of the division, and Albazi's a name that you could throw in there because he's been great. But Albazi kind of missed it a little bit. Yes, it's injury. Yes, he falls out of the Moreno fight. Does him being inactive and not fighting and the record that he's currently got, does that warrant him stepping in at 301 if he's fit and available and ready to go? Yeah. I don't know. The plus side from Mo's point of view is that on paper, you look at it, he's had six fights in the UFC. He's got four finishes in there. And he's got a signature win over Elliott, and he's got that and he's now got a win over Perez. However it looks, he's got a win over Perez. And he's calling for it. He's on the microphone going, I'll be ready in 10 weeks. I'll go and do it in 10 weeks' time.
Yeah.
You mentioned all the other names, the Kai Kara France, who's supposed to have a concussion ban at the moment, so I don't know if he's available. So I see it coming down to two people. I think there's two people in this conversation. I think it's Royval, and I think it's Mo. And based on where Pantoja's at, I think Mohamed Mokhaev makes the most amount of sense. Now, and this is the conversation now. Is he ready for it? Well, it's the UFC, mate. It's not, you know, well, let's have a couple more before we get to that
course.
Point.
Yeah.
If you're next up, you're next up.
You're next. I agree.
I think, and watching that fight at the weekend, I was frustrated in the second. The first round, he comes out and I'm thinking, yes, come on, son. This is it. Do this. This is good stuff. And then it's like a thing in his head goes and he reverts back to, I don't know whether it's a confidence. I don't know what it is because he doesn't come across as a lad that lacks confidence. Something goes in his head and then he goes down this path of stop doing that. It's not working.
Yeah.
Perez is stuffing those takedowns. You're proven in the first round that you can stand and fight him with your hands and your feet. Go back to that. The shooting's not working, so let's go back to what we were doing. And he just doesn't do it. He keeps persisting down avenues that and expecting a different result.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe, and this is going to sound harsh now, because I agree with you. I think if they fight in Brazil, Pantoja will win. That's what I think will happen. Mm-hmm. But it might be the best thing to ever happen to him.
Yeah,
because it might be the thing where he goes, right, I need to change now. Right now, he doesn't have that thing where it's, I have to change because I'm winning, mate. Yeah, and I keep pulling it out of the fire. So I don't have to change. I'm right. Yeah. So maybe if he goes in with a five-rounder against Pantoja and Pantoja beats him over that period, then Mo has to go, right, what did I do wrong? Okay, now I've got to change. Because he's going to get there. He's going to be champion. It's going to happen.
Yeah.
I just don't know if it happens in Brazil.
I think the obvious choice for the UFC right now would be Amir Albazi. I think Amir Albazi, by Maybe. Not fighting, has solidified his spot as the next contender because Royval Moreno are the only two guys ranked above him in the rankings. He's in three and they're in two and one. have obviously just fought. And, you know, Roy Val, whose last fight was against Pantoja, didn't do enough for us to go, okay, this is Roy Val 2.0. Let's get him in there with the champs. So it's an impossible sell. Moreno's coming off a loss. Kaikirov, I'm just going to whiz down now, everyone above Mo. Kaikirov France is coming off a loss. Mateus Nicolau is coming off a loss. Menel Kapp is coming off a win. He's one place above. This is Mokhiev now replacing Perez in seven. So Manel Kapp's in six. Manel Kapp's coming off a win. He's one place above Mo Mokhiev in the rankings, but he himself fought Pantoja a couple of years ago and got beat. It was a unanimous decision over three rounds in Vegas. So again, that's a rematch. That's a hard sell. The only one who hasn't fought above, who hasn't fought and is coming off a win, who hasn't fought Pantoja, is coming off a win, is Albazi. If Albazi's fit and available, Albazi is deserving of the opportunity to go, right, before we ring this fella from Wigan, we're ringing you first. Do you want to go to Rio and fight Pantoja for the belt? Yes or no, will you be ready? And if it's for me, it's Amir Albazi's decision on that phone call that will prove whether Mo Mokhiev gets the... Because we know if they call Mo, right, we're going to ring Albazi. We're going to offer it to him. If he doesn't want it, you want it. And he'll be like, fuck Albazi, I'm going. Do you know what I mean? He will get it. We know Mo wants it. Mo will take it. So I don't think it's a case. I think you're right. I think it's not necessarily a case of, is he ready? Is the development there? You know, have we seen enough right now? For me, he's the second guy in the line. And if Albazi isn't ready, if Albazi doesn't want to take this opportunity, if he doesn't fancy Rio, listen, Albazi's a fighting man. It's a world title fight. He's going to jump at it. But Albazi will want to be 100% because he's worked his entire career to get to this point. And you want to make sure that you take it with both hands. So I just think it's down to that conversation. If Albazi's not going to be fit and turns it down, Mo Mokhiev will fight Pantoja in Rio.
So let's say your first scenario happens, right? So it's Pantoja versus Albazi at 301.
Yes.
Do you try and make Mo versus Roy Val?
100%. 100%. But then, you know, that's me supporting Mo and championing Mo's opportunity as the next contender. You know, there's also guys like Manel Kapp. Basically, the five guys ranked above Mo will be like, wait a minute, why is he leapfrogging all of us?
Well, a lot of them are not fit. They're falling out, aren't they? There's people there that have missed weight massively in fights. You've got people that are on concussion bans. You've got people that are injured. So this isn't a case of who deserves what. Of course, what you're saying there is absolutely right. Mo is number seven for a reason because there's six people above him that have earned the opportunity to be there.
Yeah.
Right? But are they fit? Are they ready to go in 10 weeks? Are you ready to go? If you're ready to go in 10 weeks, cool. Then you've got an argument. But if you're not, then stop chatting. This is the guy's ready to go in 10 weeks. Are you? That's the conversation.
Mm-hmm. As a obviously a massive fan of Mo Mokhiev, I would love to see Mo. Let's say Manchester did happen in the summer. Yeah. I would love to see Mo co-main event in Manchester in a five rounder with a Roy Val or a Kaikia France.
Yeah.
Final eliminator in Manchester. Bring them home. Because what you got to also remember as well is the UFC is a business. The UFC is a star-making business. The biggest star in this division is still Brandon Moreno. Even though he's coming off a loss to Roy Val, he's the biggest star. Does massive numbers in Mexico. Does all the commentary for Spanish language, for UFC, everything else. He's a massive star. So Brandon Moreno, who, you know, just lost on points to Roy Val in a very close fight in his hoodoo city of Mexico City. Moreno's going to get an opportunity to stay in the frame. Of course he is. I think maybe Mokhiev Moreno could be the fight. If Roy Val goes, nah, man, get me on the plane to Brazil. I think that's Mo should go, right, let's go with Brandon Moreno, though. Because Mo is yet to become a superstar. But, like, listen, you get the fight. You get the superstar status when you win the biggest fights. So yeah, I think Mo becomes UFC, and we both agree. One day Mo Mokhiev will be UFC champion. One day he will be. Will it be this year? I'm not sure it will. I'm not sure the opportunity will come. But that is 100% down to the, for me, the fitness of Amir Albazi. Falbazi ain't ready to go in Rio, our boy will get on the plane. No doubt about it.
Steve Irsegg, get him on the plane, man.
Oh,
he's the guy, isn't he? Astro boy.
That was a statement.
Listen, we highlighted Schnell's resume and record in the UFC on last week's show. And it's super exciting because it's either you or him. He's all action. And it was exactly that come this fight at the weekend. But we highlighted this on last week's preview show. Irsegg, right, you've looked safe, mate. You've looked good. You're technically tidy. Yeah, I like what I see. Come on, man. Let's put your foot down a little bit. Give me something. Give me that viral moment. Jesus, he must have been listening. Jesus. Come out the gate. Right. Rat-a-tat-tat. This is good. Yeah, good fight. Wow. Out of absolutely nowhere. That beautiful left right on the whiskers, mate. One punch. Walked off. Couldn't have wished for a better night for him. Sensational. Yeah. And gets himself in the conversation for some big fights in the division now.
Well, he's just chinned Matt Schnell, who was ninth. So you had Perez 7, Mo 8, Schnell 9, Irsegg down in 12th. So you'd like to think by the end of today, Mo will have leapfrogged Perez, and obviously Irsegg will have replaced Schnell and at least knocked them down a spot. So yeah. Irsegg now is right behind Alex Perez and Mo Mokhiev. So he's in the top 10 now. That was the type of performance that if Mo dropped needed. That...
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the viral moment performance, the bonus check winning performance where you go, boom, no question about it. Don't even ring Al-Bazi. This kid's next. Get him on a plane. But Steve Irsegg is ranked a lot lower than that. Steve Irsegg does need another couple of wins, obviously, to get that opportunity. So it's just a shame it went that way and not from Mo's perspective. From Steve Irsegg's perspective, absolutely sensational. You know, is he the biggest hitter in the division? Is he the biggest puncher we've seen since Figueiredo? Like this guy, that was a serious shot. It's the shot you don't see that does the damage. And obviously, Matt Schnell just did not see that left hook coming. But I couldn't believe people were criticizing. Was it Goddard? I think it was Goddard, wasn't it? I can't believe people were criticizing the referee for stopping that fight. He absolutely switched his life. I see people online going, well, you know, you didn't give Matt Schnell a chance to recover. I'm like, mate,
he nailed him.
His head bounced off the canvas. He got knocked out twice. He got slapped. He went down. He banged his head on the floor. Like, he literally, boom, like a body. It was absolutely unreal. That was a statement. That was a viral moment. And, of course, that was a $50,000 left hook.
Yeah. Yeah, great, man. And I'm excited now because... there's certain fighters that come into the UFC, they have a little bit of chat about them, a bit of hype around them, and then they come in and you can see the technicality, you can see how technically good they are, but there's not that moment. Evloev's going through it right now.
Yeah.
You see how good he is, and you think, come on, mate, come on, put your foot down, show me the thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Irsegg did the thing at the weekend, man. Brilliant, like you say. A bonus winning performance from him, setting himself up some big fights in this division.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
I'll tell you what I did see on social media, actually. Lots of people getting in on Umar Nurmagomedov. I don't know what it is. People just like to dog out on people every now and again, don't they? Yes, he gets dropped in, 30, 40 seconds or whatever it is.
Yeah.
What happened to the rest of the fight? Exactly. Right? How did he respond? This is what you want, don't you? young, I say a young lad, he's been out for a bit, 14 months we haven't seen Umar in the octagon. And he'll complain and his team will complain, well, I can't get matched. I've tried to do this and I've tried to do that and this hasn't happened and this hasn't happened. Okay, well, you're in at the weekend and they brought in somebody fresh making his UFC debut who was on a great win streak, bags of confidence, and his eyes have lit up. I've got Nurmagomedov stood across from me. Right, let's have it. Kid comes out, drops him in 30, 40 seconds. Next thing you know, you're thinking, this is going to be interesting. What's Umar going to do? What's the response? How are you going to deal with this right now, Sunshine? Well, I'll tell you how he deals with it. He ragdolls the living daylights out of him, dishing out 10-8s for fun over the next 10 minutes. People having a go at Umar's performance because it was wrestle-heavy. Sound, man. It might not be the most attractive thing. It might not be the sexiest thing. I get that completely. You might not be buying a ticket to go and watch him. Try and fucking beat him. Mm-hmm. Try and beat him. Because that, given what happened in the first 40 seconds of that fight, to then dish out what he then does for the next 13 minutes, pretty special stuff, that, mate. Pretty special stuff.
This is what I don't understand. People absolutely went mental when Khabib did it. People like, oh, it's amazing. It's absolutely incredible. And when Umar does it, everyone's like, it's just wrestling. It's just grappling, isn't it? You know,
it's just wrestling.
Come on, man. Come on, man. You've got to admire what he's just done. Bear in mind, he got chinned in the first 90 seconds, dropped. So then you can't begrudge him to go, well, I'll tell you what then. That was a big shot. You've obviously got heavy hands. Right, let's play over here, shall we? And to be able to have the skill set to just completely dominate him in that way. Come on. It was outstanding. And I've seen his post-fight interview as well. I don't know where I didn't see his octagon interview, but his media interview afterwards where he was talking about what's going on out in Gaza and everything else. He's a good guy, Umar, and a very, very talented fighter. And it's going to be a journey. And listen, maybe he has. People are like, oh, he's got no chin. Where people get that from, I don't know. Got no chin means when you get caught, you get switched off. Getting dropped, getting back up and dominating a fight doesn't mean you've got a bad chin. It means you've got a great chin. It means you got caught with a shot that you didn't see coming. Got caught with a good shot that put you down. Because you've got a great chin, you were able to get back up, clear your head, win that round, and then win the next two rounds, 10-8, 10-8. That, for me, is a great chin. People who see someone get dropped and go, oh, he's got no chin in, you're mental. Like saying Tyson Fury's got no chin. Tyson Fury's got a
got the best chin. He's got the best chin.
He fucking just gets up every single time. That's a great chin. Honest.
Oh, man. Corey Sandhagen next. I think they should rebook that. Let's try and make that fight for Umar Nurmagomedov.
Yeah,
given the fact that obviously we've got a title fight in this division coming up this week at UFC 299, that seems to be the eliminator fight for me, Umar against Corey.
Yeah, somewhere down the line, I think we're going to get a Umar versus Mirab, and people are going to lose their minds when it turns into a boxing match.
Or just two dudes just rolling around on the mat, just rolling just like that, all for 15 minutes or whatever it'll be. Go on, you want to talk about it? Flying knees, go on. Vinicius Oliveira.
Yeah, and obviously, when you see a knockout like that, it went viral. Everyone should have seen it by now. Vinicius Oliveira's flying knee knockout of Bernardo Sopage. Absolutely brutal, you know, and I tweeted about it, and I was like, literally, at the kid's footy going, you want to see a dead body? Look at this, what a knockout. Like, that's one of them knockouts where you go, oh my God, someone wake that kid up and make sure he's all right. Count his teeth for him. The beauty of it is, old Bernardo woke up in a hospital bed somewhere and someone informed him he got a $50,000 bonus there. Not for swallowing the knee, but for what he did in the 14 minutes and 41 seconds that led to him swallowing the knee. Great fight, back and forth, absolute war, but just a little bit too much for Bernardo down the stretch. And that finish from Oliveira, just that's a knockout of the year contender, you know, to catch him rolling back against the fence, fly forward, big flying scissor knee straight across the chin, folds like a deck chair. Oh, mate.
Should we, here's one for you. Should we have got to that point? Should it have been waved off before it? Because he was taking an hide in at that point, wasn't he, Sopage?
It was, but then this brings us back to the fight of the night from last week as well. You know, at this point in time, the fight had gone for Bernardo, and you're like, let's just see if he can hear the final bell. We were at that point in deep into that third round. Last week, the fight of the night, the guy took a bit of a shellacking for the full three rounds. But on both occasions here, okay, are they the type of losses that might stick with them, that might not recover from? Yeah, absolutely. But would they, if Sopage's corner 30 seconds before the finish had threw in the towel and stopped the fight, then maybe it doesn't get fighter of the night. Maybe it doesn't get a $50,000 bonus. Mm. Maybe it doesn't get, it probably would have done. It probably would have done because it was so much activity in there. But I don't know, it's a difficult one, this one in MMA, because it's not like boxing. Because of this anomaly of the $50,000 bonus, there's more emphasis towards, he's taking a bit of a shellacking now, but it's a fucking brilliant fight, isn't it? You know, we're getting 30 grand here. He could be taking 80 home to his family if we give him another minute, if we give him another 5 minutes. So I think it's a bigger conversation in MMA between the corner than it is necessarily in boxing. Pull you out, save you for another day. You're getting paid now. You've locked your money in. In MMA, in the UFC, there's the $50,000 bonus that has to be brought, has to be considered. I don't know whether that's right.
No, well, it's poignant that you bring that up because obviously of what Tyson Pedro said in his retirement speech afterwards, of which we'll finish on that in a minute. Ayman Zahabi.
But Oliveira. Oliveira gets fight of the night bonus and knockout of the night bonus. Kid made 100 bags on top of his contract, which was his show money, his win money. So let's say his fight contract was 25 grand, double it if you win. So he's won 50 grand. Then he gets 100 grand on top for fight of the night and knockout of the night. Dude's going back home. Oliveira with 150 bags, for instance, when he thought, best scenario, I'm getting 50 grand here. 150, trebled his money. Amazing.
And he called out Umar Nurmagomedov as well.
If you want to do it, let's do it. You do it. Because that's a main card fight for him.
Yeah. Ayman Zahabi, you highlighted him last week in the preview, taking on Javi Basharat. Basharat coming into the fight, obviously undefeated through 14 fights. I thought Zahabi rallied really well in this fight. He used a lot of know-how, skill, IQ, experience, even though we haven't seen him for ages. It just felt like an old man type of performance, if that makes sense. And I don't want to make that sound harsh. I thought it was a mature. That's the word I'm looking for. It was a mature performance from Zahabi. The thing is, though, now, mate, he's had 7 fights since 2017, right? He's got to do something because he's 36 years of age. He's got to get cracking, hasn't he? He's got to get active. If he's going to do something, if he's going to achieve, if he's going to make some noise, he's got to get cracking. He's got to get active.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know whether that might be a bit late for him now. I don't know whether he ever set out to become, he probably did, to be a UFC champion, or whether he's just enjoying his MMA, enjoying being a UFC, enjoying his fights when he gets them. I think the difference here, you're right, was down to experience, but it also come down to the fact that, obviously, Zahabi's big brother is one of the best technical minds in the sport of MMA. So when they're taking a fight against an undefeated kid like Basharat, super talented, unbeaten for a reason. When you're an undefeated fighter like Basharat, the guy's name on the other side of the contract doesn't matter because you're so good, you've beaten everybody, that as long as you turn up with your A game, you're going to get there. You're going to get it done. You'll get it done. And that is why it's important for these fighters to suffer a defeat of being brought down to earth. I would hazard a guess that Basharat and his team probably didn't do that much tape with Zahabi, with all due respect to Zahabi. Not that active in the twilight of his career. Basharat's on a different journey. I'm going up the rankings, kid. I've got my eyesight in the top 15. I'm thinking about the champion. I'm thinking about who's got the belt at bantamweight, where the strengths and weaknesses are in that top 10, who suits my style first, holds in my game. Like, that's where his mind's at. Whereas Zahabi's mind is more like, right, how do I go out with a bang? How do I pick up some wins? And this is the type of opponents, a younger defeated fighter that thinks his shit don't stink. Perfect for us. Loads of tape on Basharat, Firas Zahabi will have sat there watching the tape. They'd have come up with a proper game plan. And okay, you're right. You had to dig deep down the stretch. But I think there was so much experience in that Zahabi corner that when Bashirat realised, shit, I'm in a fight here, it already kind of slipped through his fingers. Mm. But just like with Chris Leroy Duncan against Petrosian, I think this will be the making of Bashirat. This will be the making of him, because he'll go away now and go, okay, all right, my shit does stink a little bit. There is holes in my game. There is a different level of focus that I need to bring to the octagon now. It's not just good enough to be the best version of Javid and I can beat anyone. I have to tailor my game towards my opponents and be a bit more precise with my game planning. It's all part of the journey, man. It's all part of the journey. Don't call it a comeback. But that L is more important than the previous 12 wins.
Yeah.
Whatever it was.
14, I think it was. Which brings us on nicely, again, just to finish this off, talking about Tyson Pedro, who called time off the back of his loss to Petrino. Like I said at the start of this, there's no point in going off the fight too much because it was a bit ploddy and it wasn't necessarily something that I would recommend you go back and watch. But watching him post-fight in, obviously, he's retired, he's put his gloves down, he's then gone backstage and he's done the media interviews, and listening to him chat there just highlights a few things of some of the struggles that these athletes go through and the where their heads are at in preparation for competition. It's hard, man, because I bleat on all the time when we're talking about fighter pay and people make that comparison to boxing. I always talk about the top 1%. The top 1%, yeah, you're right, in the world of boxing, do earn more money than in the world of MMA. But the rest of the MMA card, when you're comparing it to boxing, is earning more dough. There's people at the they're kicking off this card here, absolutely getting paid more money than people kicking off a card in the world of boxing. So when you hear Tyson Pedro talk about that financially it doesn't seem to be working out for him to be able to be a fighter, and that he's going to have to pursue something else in order to be around his family more and provide for his family, it's heartbreaking because he's a talented kid and this is his life. This is the world that he comes from, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It is, and it's a weird sport, MMA, in that regard, because, you know, it's hard to compare it with boxing because boxing's so stunted in terms of the pay. You know, I watched an amazing video the other day by Tony Jeffries, the boxer from Sunderland, and he lives in America now. He lives in California. He's got his own boxing gym. He's got his own YouTube channel. He posted something on Twitter the other day. He only turned pro for 2 years, Tony Jeffries. And he ended up retiring from boxing. I think it was due to injury, to be honest with you. But he explained exactly what he'd earned in those 2 years. Exactly. Almost down to the pound, including his digs, everything else, and blah, blah, blah. And he was talking about, you know, how much he would get per fight. And he was like, you know, I was getting anywhere between 16,000 for an away fight and 20,000 for a fight in Sunderland. And, you know, I was fighting six times a year. So it worked out here 200 grand, but I had digs in Manchester where my gym was, or Bolton or whatever it was. So he was kind of like breaking down his money, and it was he was promised 20 grand signing on bonus by the promoter, but he only got 15 for it for whatever reason, because of a recession and all this kind of stuff. It was really, really eye-opening. You got to remember, Tony Jeffries was an Olympian. He came out of an Olympic Games. That's why he got a 20 grand sign-on bonus. That's why he was able to negotiate a 16 grand flat rate for his first four-rounders, six-rounders, going up to 20 grand when it's in Sunderland or in the Northeast, because he's selling tickets and he's the person bringing people in and stuff like that. MMA doesn't have that capacity at all, because the way the UFC is done by design, you buy tickets for UFC. You know, and obviously it's got its names. It's got Conor McGregor's and Jon Jones and Habib's at the top. But when it comes further down, you know, let's say there's a show in London. Chris Leroy Duncan, for instance, makes his debut. It's not like Chris Leroy Duncan can go, tell you what, give us 1,000 tickets to UFC and I'll take 10% off my ticket sales to bolster my money. It doesn't work like that. UFC sells regardless of whether Chris Leroy Duncan does media or appears on the card or not. So the model's different. They don't get ticket money. And unless you're in that very top, you don't get a share of the television revenue or the pay-per-view as well. So it is a completely different model. However, you're right. You know, these guys at the weekend, there's probably people on this card at the Apex, the early curtain jerkers, that might have been on 12 and 12 or, you know, whatever. Well, there was a show in Liverpool, in the UK on Friday night, live on Channel 5, the Sam Eggington show, that I guarantee 90% of that card, not one of them was earning 16 grand. Sam Eggington was probably only earning about 30 grand, and he was the main event live on terrestrial TV. And yet the basic here for, let's say, Ludovic Klein, second on at the Apex. Ludovic Klein's been around for a while, like Sam Eggington. He's definitely on more than 16 show. He's probably on at least 30 show, and he won. So he's probably getting 60 grand. Sam Eggington probably didn't get 60 grand to headline on Channel 5. So there's the comparison. There's the money comparison. Now, bringing it back to Tyson Pedro, yeah, I'm watching that. I'm devastated. I'm thinking co-main event in Las Vegas, your 11th or 12th fight in the UFC. I know his backstory. I know who Tyson Pedro is. I know what he's done. Funnily enough, a little bit similar to Tony Jeffries and his dad, Phil Jeffries, who bloody do all them shows up in the Northeast, keep boxing going in the Northeast in a professional capacity. That's kind of like the Pedro family in America, in Australia, bringing MMA over there in a weird juxtaposition. But he's not earning enough money. You know, Tyson said, I've moved to New Zealand for me. I go to New Zealand for me training camps, and I don't see enough of me family. The sacrifice is not worth it for what I'm getting. And, I completely agree with him. Co-main events, UFC in Las Vegas, ESPN, the massive TV deal. I won't have it for a second that Tyson Pedro and probably Pacino here, who absolutely was on less show money, aren't getting paid enough. I agree with you. They should be getting paid more, in my opinion. There should be a reward for having so many fights, for being in this position. There's also a conversation to go, well, that's the management should be arguing that. His management should be having that conversation. And by the way the UFC model is built, you kind of know what you're getting when you're going in. You're only getting 50 grand Tyson show money. Sound man, well, that'll only just cover me costs. But don't worry, because when I win, I'll get 100 grand, and that's where I'm making me money. And when you don't win, then it is tough, because you are looking at it going, fucking hell. By the time I pay for me digs, pay for me nutrition, pay for me coaches, pay for me sparring, pay for to fly the extra coaches over, I'm losing money here fighting the UFC. So I completely get it. I completely get where he's coming from. And it is incredibly tough. It is incredibly tough. So, and he'd probably make more money going back and fighting on the local scene, because guess what? He's Tyson Pedro. He can main event to Australian shows, and that money stays in his bank. You've also got to factor in here as well that paying tax, this is the big thing probably. He has to pay tax in America on his earnings there. And when he goes back to Australia, he's got to pay tax on those earnings again. So that will be the biggest takeaway. That's the biggest thing. We go, oh my God, I'm losing an absolute fortune. You know, so many fighters who'll go, I ain't fighting in New York.
Yeah.
I think Paddy the Baddy came out and went, I ain't fighting in New York. You see how much tax you have to pay? And there's a few. We've spoke to Bisping about it. Bisping said, you go to Australia, freaking hell, they cut your check in half before you get on the plane home. So there's all that kind of stuff to factor into it. I'm gutted for Tyson Pedro, and it is a familiar story. But unfortunately, this is the game you're in. Yes, you're underpaid, but if you win a few fights and if you become the light heavyweight champion, that's when the seven-figure checks come in. That's when you start, you know what I mean, earning serious money. Alex Pereira, as light heavyweight UFC champion, is earning more money than any of the boxing light heavyweight champions. He's earning more than Chris Billam Smith. I'll tell you that now. The light heavyweight champion that defends his belt in Bournemouth. That's the game, unfortunately. That's fight sport, isn't it?
It is, mate. It is. I wanted I don't know if you saw this. This is not UFC, what I'm highlighting. And obviously, it seems a bit of a gear change from going from what we're just speaking about. No. I'm not doing bare knuckle. I'm going to stay off game bread bare knuckle thing at the weekend. Did you see the one championship thing on, I think it was Thursday or Friday night?
I didn't see it, because I was out at the time, but I'd seen loads of the headline tweeting about it.
Right. So, listen, one championship's Muay Thai, one championship's kickboxing, sensational. It's awesome to watch. Phenomenal. It's MMA is a touchdown, right? I'm not going to lie. If you want elite MMA, obviously you're turning your attention towards the UFC. This week, obviously, you could turn your attention towards the PFL. So ONE Championship MMA is a touchdown from the level of its Muay Thai and its kickboxing. But we've got a three-division simultaneous champion, ladies and gentlemen, in ONE Championship. Anatoly Malikin is the middleweight, light heavyweight, and heavyweight simultaneous champion in the world of mixed martial arts. That is absolute madness. I'm not too clued up on the depth and level of competition in all those divisions in ONE Championship, but well done, mate. To be the 185, the 205, and the 205 plus champion. That's impressive. That's very impressive.
Didn't Bob Fitzsimmons or something do that in boxing back in like 1788 I'm sure he was a three-weight champion.
I don't know if it was simultaneous though. This guy's got three belts. He's holding them all at the same time, mate.
I know, but what did he do? Choke out Sage Northcutt for the heavyweight belt or something? I don't know.
Like I said, the level of... I've watched a couple of MMA fights in ONE Championship, and you can tell that it is just a touchdown from everything that you're used to watching with PFL and the UFC, of course. But to be a three-weight simultaneous champion is incredibly impressive. Anatoly Malikin, keep an eye or keep an ear out for that fella. Mm-hmm. There you go. This week, all our attention will be in the world of MMA on Miami. It's an action packed week. Paris, Cedric Dunbe is fighting. I love the noise about. Have you seen what he's been doing this week?
Mate, Dunbe is one of the biggest stars in mixed martial arts.
Correct.
Period. Correct. Regardless of where he is. Did you see do you know his tickets for this PFL show on Thursday sold out in like seconds? Inside an hour.
It's McGregor stuff, is what it is.
But did you see the promo that he made and his poster just rolled down off the Arc de Triomphe? He had the Arc de Triomphe and the whole thing was just one big poster just dropped down.
Hey,
unbelievable, mate. Next level.
I think it was Thursday last week, the guy's driving around Paris in an ambulance with a picture of his opponent's face on it saying, "This is for him." He's off his cake. He walked to the smart cage last time with a mattress with bon nuit. Yeah. Good night on the mattress. Honestly, Thursday night, Cedric Dunbe. We might even release our MMA show slightly earlier this week. Because I want to give you a good pomp on Cedric Dunbe because he's fighting Thursday. Ken Musa, British fighter, Manchester lad. He's on this card as well in Paris. It's a good card. It's a really good card, PFL, on Thursday. But Cedric
Dunbe
is the one.
Oh, Cedric Dunbe is an absolute superstar, yeah. Is it their first European card of the year? Is it the start of like... Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
So is it European tournament stuff or is it just a... Is it the start of the European tournaments?
No, not as I know of, mate. This is... you're asking me questions that I've not fully researched. I will find that information out. But all I know is that Cedric Dunbe is fighting in Paris. We've been lucky enough to go and watch MMA in Paris. It's mental. You saw what it was like when the PFL rocked up there. You've seen what it's like even when Bellator rocked up there a couple of years ago. It's absolutely crackers watching MMA in the French capital, especially when Dunbe is on the card. It's going to be good. So that's Thursday night.
Okay, so it is, yeah. It's the start of the European tournament format, so it looks like welterweights and lightweights on deck. Mega.
Mate, I'm only here for Dunbe. Everybody's in the same boat. We're here for Dunbe. Yeah. To be fair, I love Ken Musa, so I'm here for a bit of Ken Musa and I'm here for a little bit of Cedric Dunbe. There's also a few other English talents on this as well. We'll do all this in the preview show, but it's something on Thursday for you. And then obviously UFC 299, Miami. What a card that is. If you are not all in on Dustin Poirier, Benoit Saint-Denis, is that we're keeping the French theme going, then what the bloody hell are you doing? That fight is going to be absolutely insane.
Do you know what? I'm just looking at this card again, and it's fucking brilliant. It's brilliant. Blades Almeida's fascinating. Yan Song Yadong, unreal. Gilbert Burns, Jack Maddalena. Woo! The old man there. I fancy the old man. Kevin Holland, Michael Page, man. Questions will be answered. Poirier sent their knee. Jesus H. Christ. And then Sean O'Malley rematching Marlon Vera. Was it a fluke? First time around. Or has Marlon got the champ's number? What a week. What a week.
And JoJo says goodbye. She's on there as well.
Yeah, JoJo's farewell in the opener. Yeah, and the curtain jerker. Absolutely.
Unreal. Anyway, that's to come later on in the week. And of course, sandwiched in the middle of that, we'll have quite a lot of boxing chat. So don't forget, like I said right at the start of the show, we are going to be live tonight at 8 o'clock on our YouTube channel, talking Anthony Joshua, Francis Ngannou. That's going to happen every single night this week. So 8 o'clock on
UK
our YouTube
time,
channel.
GMT. International.
So 8 o'clock GMT on our YouTube channel, we will be live, and therefore you'll be able to fully interact. There'll be a comment section. So if you're saying stuff and you're interacting with the things that we're speaking about, we'll flash it up on the screen. We'll have a little bit of a converse. And then on Wednesday, we'll get you involved. So if you want to actually be on screen and be involved in the conversation, there'll be an opportunity to do that on Wednesday's live program. All right. There you go. Make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel so you never miss the notifications for the live shows, just in case you're busy throughout the course of the week. You think, hey, the lads are on. Let's jump on in. Excellent stuff. We'll catch you next time.
Thank you for listening. If you like what you heard, subscribe via iTunes.